Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
Hey, good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. And I have to say, I haven't been so excited about an interview in a really long time, but I have been introduced now. Okay, so let's go back like 2 weeks. I was getting right, like, yeah, you know, it's Easter. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought about a book that I'd read, you know, several years ago, Anna, Grandmother of Jesus. I thought, you know, that's a really lovely book. And I thought, wait a minute, I have this great book that's supposed to be, you know, that I'm doing an interview on. So why don't I read that? So it is the Earth Angels Academy. And I can't say enough about this book. I can't say enough about how it inspired me and opened me up. And so since then, Michelle Gordon and I have been chatting relentlessly on, you know, connecting and doing this interview. And I am just, I am thrilled to have you on the show, Michelle. So thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's great.
Now, you have done, well, you've done 10 books that I know of, 6 in the Earth Angel Academy series and 4 in the Visionary. Is that what you called it?
Yeah, the Visionary Collection.
Right. So I've now read all of them.
Wow, you've been busy this weekend.
Well, I read, once I read your first book, which is what we're going to chat about, and we're also going to talk about the fact that you're actually going to be coming to North America, which is great. I don't know if you've noticed, but she does have an accent. She is from across the pond, and she will be joining us, which is very exciting. And part of it is because you actually are bringing out the fifth year edition of the Earth Angel Academy.
Yeah, so it's 5 years since first publishing the Earth Angel Training Academy, and yeah, I'm just excited to have got a new cover for it, and have just, you know, added a few things inside, and it's just to celebrate the fact that it's been 5 years and it's been a pretty crazy journey. And in that time, yeah, so published another 5 books in that series, and there's lots more to come in that series as
Yay.
Well. So we're excited about that.
Well, we are excited about that because I can't get enough of it. I reread the first book yesterday just because, Well, I mean, it really wasn't necessary because I really didn't forget that much. But, you know, I found the Visionary, you know, some of them were lovely. I found some of it being sensitive, I found some of it really hard to read.
Right, yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
it was,
I've,
like,
had that comments before, yeah. Some, yeah, of it is very much more human.
They're very, very human. And, you, yes, know, and I get it. I mean, because, and that's one of the themes we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about themes because I don't really want to give away the story. The story is beautiful. You want to read it yourself. This is a sort of fictionary.
Fictionary, I like it. Yeah, it's visionary fiction, so it's spiritual fiction, but it is based on, you know, spiritual and metaphysical concepts and a lot of my own experiences and concepts as well. So yeah, most people who read it and love it are just like, this is not fiction. But
that's right.
Obviously, that's how I write it and how I market it. So
right. Yes, because there'd be other people that, yes.
To most people, it would be complete fantasy.
Right.
And that's also really cool because I love reading fantasy myself. So
yeah, me too.
You know, I love a good story, and I'm not expecting anyone to believe it. But it's great when people do resonate with it and get more from it than just a story.
Yeah. So one of the themes that you talk about, obviously, in both books or in both series is death. And I get that, you know, we are to see death as, you know, it's just, well, actually, I have a lovely quote, if I can pick that up and find it. But, you know, you kind of, you know, like I said, the visionary ones were just a tad, darker just because of some of the things that happened in it. I found it kind of hard to read. But when it comes to, let me see if I can pull up this quote quickly. Of course, I can't find it now that I'm looking for it. But I think, you know, Amethyst talks about death. Death is the discovery of pure love and the realization that you may just be one drop in the ocean, but you are a very beautiful drop. We have this, obviously, we have this fear around death, and you're probably one of the only series of books or only people that I've met that have made me rethink the whole thing about suicide. Not because I want to, but we have this thing about suicide being, you know, a very bad thing, that it karmically affects your spiritual evolution and awakening. And, you know, there's a fair bit of it in your books. And yeah, there's the darker bits in the Visionary series that, you know, was just too semi-sensitive. But, you know, it's like helping people understand that there truly is no death. It's not, we're just transitioning. We're just moving from one to the other. And once we get to that side, it seems like such a beautiful experience to deny people. So, but we've all had those really, really challenging times. Like a few years ago, like I had some very difficult times. So I probably wasn't ready for these books then, but I know that, you know, I know for me, you know, suicide has never been an option, because it's like, no, you know, we have so much to do. We have so much that we have to do. Like, it's just not seeming to be an option. But a lot of spiritual people or a lot of spiritual teachings will, you know, you'll go to a very dark place if you commit suicide. So I do like your take on it.
Well, it's interesting, obviously, hearing from somebody who's read the books in a very short space of time, because obviously you're probably seeing a lot of the patterns and themes and threads that, you know, over the last 5 years, it's kind of been spread out. So I wouldn't sort of look at it in the same way, which is quite interesting.
Well, those and weren't my I'll biggest be, ones, but that, yeah. It was just one that I thought of when I was thinking of The Visionary.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I suppose one of the reasons why death is such a huge theme in my writing, and was very much so in the poetry and short stories I used to write before I started writing the novels, is because for a long, long time I was terrified of it. Mm. I would have panic attacks about the idea of not existing anymore. It wasn't so much the dying part, it was just the not existing. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that every now and then it would, you know, occur to me and think, oh my gosh, what happens when I don't exist? And I suppose writing the stories about life after death, about spirits, about what happens when you die, where you go, I suppose doing that was a way of kind of understanding it and exploring it in my own way for myself, for my own healing. And also with the concept of the Earth Angels, obviously, you know, they're beings from all different planets and realms, and they know that this is not their home. You know, Earth is not where they come from. And when they leave Earth, they'll go home to where they came from, or they'll go on to somewhere else. And that knowing, that feeling of wanting to go home is quite strong in a lot of them. So really, yeah, death is just a way of going home. Yeah. And I suppose, yeah, for myself, it was just like I wanted to explore all those ideas of, you know, what really does happen. And again, I suppose the idea of suicide, you know, I've known many people who have committed suicide. And in fact, you talk about the Visionary Collection. One of those books is about a friend who committed suicide. Oh. I don't go into any details particularly on his actual death in it, but... And I don't know how sort of into the spiritual we can go on this one. I'm sure we can go fairly woo. But yes. Basically, that book was co-written with his spirit.
Oh, lovely.
And he has been with me since about 3 months after he passed. Ah. And he's the one that makes me write. And in fact, when I don't write, he then goes and haunts my editor.
Lovely.
And she passes on the message, and it freaks out her husband when she's calling out this other guy's name in her sleep. But anyway, it's a whole other story. Right. But But yeah, so I suppose exploring all of that was really my own way of figuring out how to be okay with the idea of death. And, right. you know, having seen it, you know, many times, you know, I've sat with people who've been dying in various jobs that I've had. I've lost people that I've been close to, and, you know, and again, I've got a lot of friends who are psychics and mediums who can see spirits and speak to them. And so, yeah, well, the concept of death, and in fact, in the online classes that I've been doing based on the Academy, one of them is about death, Death 101, which is based on, you know, in the book, you know, all the characters are learning about death and what humans think about it. And it's actually one of my favorite classes because I love exploring the idea. I suppose, like you said, I like to make it seem less scary, because it's not scary. It's just that as humans, we can't imagine existing in any other way or any other form than what we do now. So we think it's the end. We think that's it. And it's really not. You know, I've had far too many experiences now to believe that this is it, and this is all we are, and that after this is over, that's it.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about Earth angels, because that obviously is a big piece of, you know, what you're here to remind us of. I mean, it's, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, if I was in the book. I don't think I'm in the book, but even, I mean, as I said, I read the book again yesterday, and I would get so, like, the tears would still stream down even reading it, you know, the second time. And it was always either around, well, the twin flame stuff and around the children of the golden age. And I don't know, like, it's almost like, you know, I know I'm an old soul. I know I've been around for so many times. And I don't know. I think part of me, maybe I was one of the really early indigo kids, because I've had so many different people tell me different things. I'm certainly not one of the original, one of the ones that are coming now of the Children of the Golden Age. But I'm wondering, you know, maybe if that was the case, because I really seem to get affected a lot. Although they do have twin flames too. They're not from the indigo part, but yeah, so maybe, who knows? I don't know exactly. I did think, maybe, is it the one that was orange? I don't know if you've seen my website, but I love orange. I don't know if she's come back to you in any life, if you met her yet. That was a possibility.
She's the professor of manifestation?
I think so.
Is that right?
Well, yeah. See, that makes me think that, you know, since I have such issues around law of attraction, only the law of attraction that is taught by The Secret, which seems to be all greed-based and all, you know, all about things outside of ourselves instead of what it is, which is, you know, like attracts like. It's who we are that we attract. I mean, it's the essence of...
Yeah, I kind of missed out the feelings part, you know? How we feel and things, and, you know, that's what we're attracting, not necessarily what we write down or what we think.
Yeah. So I just don't think that it's, you know, how to get the biggest house or the fastest car, or, you know, I think they just missed out on some things that just weren't quite, because then everybody feels like a failure. All right. So let's talk about the Earth angels.
So the concept of the Earth angels is that, you know, beings from other galaxies and dimensions and realms. So you've got angels and star people and fairies and mer people. And they all basically come to Earth to incarnate into human bodies to help with the spiritual awakening. And the idea behind the books came from me thinking, well, you couldn't really just put a fairy or a star person into a human body and expect them to know what to do, because things are quite different in the human dimension, in the 3D that we live in. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, they must have gone somewhere for some training. They must have had some help before they got here. And that's where the Earth Angel Training Academy came from. And also born of the idea that I'd always wanted my own academy.
right.
I was just thinking, oh, it'd be so awesome to, you know, to have my own academy and to teach different things. And I was thinking, well, yeah, it's basically an academy on the other side that's teaching magical beings how to become human, how to become, you know, normal, I suppose, in some ways. And it's not that they don't still get a clean slate when they're born, because they do. But having had some of that training, they've got more chance of actually awakening. And actually, I think one of the most important parts is that because they've all been to this academy and they've interacted with one another at the academy, when you get here, you're more likely to recognize each other. Right. You're more likely to know, you know, that you've met before, and you'll have these connections and you'll help each other to wake up. So I've so far met, well, so many characters from the first book now that it's getting quite funny, actually. I'm probably going to put together that list of all the characters that I know in real life.
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be so funny, because obviously there have been so many of them, and yeah, sometimes it still blows me away when I meet one and I'm just like, oh my goodness, you are actually that character. How is that possible? That's crazy. But yeah, somehow it's possible.
Yeah, and you know, I get it. Like, I love the part that you talk about. I mean, so many of us, you know, we don't feel like we fit in. You know, as children, we thought we were very strange, or everybody else thought we were very strange. We didn't think we were strange, but everybody else thought we were very strange. So we didn't fit in. You know, we kind of questioned ourselves. You know, I've always been an empath, but at a very, very early age, I learned to shut it down because people were just so angry that I would know how people were feeling. I'm just like, well, but I mean, so I just somehow, and you know, people ask me now, well, how do you do it? I was like, I don't know. I did it when I was like four so that people wouldn't get mad at me. I don't know. So, you know, it's funny because we, you know, we have this love and this potential, and we know we're here to do something, but we get so confused. So I love the idea. I love the idea of people just reading the books so that they can remember, so that they can say, yeah, that's me. Like, that's how I feel. And you get that recognition. Like, as an old soul, like, I don't tear up very often, but reading these books, boy, it really brought stuff home. Like, I really felt, you know, I've always kind of believed in the magic, and I talk about it a lot at Christmas, because I think that time of the year, people sort of are a little bit closer because they remember, you know, that magic that everybody sort of believed in when they were children. So I always talk about that at Christmas, but I mean, it's there all the time and it's so beautiful. It's just that we forget, and it's like we become so immune to the beauty around us when we get caught up in the fear of the third dimension.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, there is a part in the book where they talk about fear. One of Velvet's talking to the second years about it. And, yeah, you know, she's saying a little bit of fear is good because, you know, it can make us cautious and keep us alive.
Yes.
But when we have so much fear in us that we don't actually do anything, because we're too afraid of what's going to happen, or we're too afraid of taking risks, then yeah, it stops us from being able to see the magic in things and to enjoy, you know, being here. I mean, as we know from the fairies, you know, the reason that they've come here is to make sure everybody has a bit of fun, because they don't really understand what, you know, what's the point of being here if we can't have a bit of fun. And it is so easy to get sucked into the sort of tiny details of everyday life.
Right.
And forget that actually there's a bigger reason and purpose to all of this. And all the tiny details, you know, can just take up your time and take you away from, you know, from your purpose, from the reason that you've come here.
Yeah.
And what it's all about, really. And yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of waking up and realizing, hang on a minute, there's got to be more to it than this. There's got to be more to it than just going to work and watching TV and, you know, sleeping, eating, going out and drinking or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a little bit more to it than this. And in some ways, that's why I wrote the books in a fictional way, because a lot of people find them as stories and then start reading, you know, more about the ideas and the subjects and the concepts and start thinking, hang on a minute, maybe there is something more to it all than this.
Right.
So,
And that's what I truly believe is part of why you wrote it. If not to remind the Earth Angels that they're Earth Angels, it's certainly to remind people that there is magic out there. And if this isn't not, this part of it isn't fantasy. This part of it is real. I mean, it truly is real, whether you want to connect with it or not. And I do love the fact that you brought up, you know, as women, you know, a lot of us connect in with the burning times. You know, so we are afraid of our own power. We're afraid to step into it, much more than men are, although there are far more women that are open to being awakened, although that is changing. But, you know, there are a lot of women that are still afraid, and that was brought up in the second years, you know, that they're afraid to make the changes. They're afraid to be different because of it's kind of in the collective unconscious. What's happened to women who've stood in their power, who have, you know, been the, you know, the inspiration? And we were burned. We were, you know, all sorts of things happened to us.
Yeah, I think, you know, having powerful women is, it's kind of a scary concept, really. I mean, in the first book, it wasn't until after I'd written it, actually, that I realized that all the main characters and all the ones in power were female. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you know, you've got the guys in there as well, but all the main characters of that book were females, and obviously Velvet is the head of the academy, and all the sort of other characters coming through had very strong ideas and pictures and things of how they wanted to do things. And I think it is kind of a scary concept to stand in that power and you know, stand your ground and speak your truth.
Yeah.
And especially for angels, you know, incarnated angels who don't want to hurt anybody. I think you have more outspoken fairies because, you know, quite honestly, they just want to say what they feel, and they don't really, they don't care if it hurts anybody, but they just want to be honest. They just want to be who they are, and they want to do what they came here to do. So they're far more outspoken.
Yeah.
The old souls tend to be a little bit more reserved, I suppose. In some ways, it's quite interesting with the whole idea of there's a lot more women who are open to spirituality. But when you look at the people who are well known in the spiritual world, there's a lot more men. You know, it's like when I think of sort of well known mediums and psychics, and you know, the ones that are most well known or are out there more tend to be male.
Interesting,
which is quite interesting. But I mean, I do have quite a lot of male readers. I know that my general readership are mostly female, but I do have a lot of male readers as well. And that's part of the reason why the Other Side came about as well. That book was kind of an interesting one to try and write because it was going to be a prequel to the Earth Angel Training Academy. And it was going to be mainly about the Golden Age children.
Right.
Which was my idea. Of course I start writing it, and that's completely not what actually came out. And basically, I had all the male characters lined up going, well, are you going to tell my story yet? So it ended up being The Other Side, which was basically the same story as the Academy, but told from the point of view of all the male characters, and also the children of the Golden Age, but more so the male characters than anybody else.
Right.
So, it, you know, I got to sort of tell their side of the story. And I think the balance of the masculine and the feminine is a really important theme at the moment, because standing in our own power as women doesn't mean that we need to become more masculine. It means we need to become more feminine.
Absolutely.
But in our power. And I think there has been some confusion, and women have becoming more masculine, so then the men are like, well, what are we supposed to do? And they're kind of losing their roles in some ways, because we're kind of taking over that. And I don't think that was really the point of what we were supposed to be doing. I think it was more to just bring in the balance between the masculine and the feminine, and honor each other for our strengths and our weaknesses, and not try to become everything.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, it's such a pivotal point, because, you know, when, you know, the whole women's movement came in the 60s, I mean, it was very masculine. I mean, it was so masculine. It just, I mean, so many women couldn't relate to it because it was way too masculine. Mm-hmm. And, there was so much competition and a lot of women that are in the highest positions. I mean, they feel they have to be, a more masculine energy to compete. And it's just sad because we really do have to embrace who we are. We need to embrace that feminine quality. And of course, in both sexes, there are a combination and there are they say it's like 20% of women will have a more masculine energy and 20% of men will have a more feminine energy. And that doesn't have anything to do with their sexuality. It just has to do with their energy. But it's, we have to find that place where we feel so comfortable. So yeah, it's a big, important thing that I hope will come out more in your books because it is important. I loved. Okay, so let's go back to your themes because we could get lost in your books forever. Let's go back to the children. So the Earth Angels are here to assist people, and you do have some great quotes, and I know that it's so. It's out there a lot about the whole butterfly wings, but it's there to make a point. Like, one person can make a huge difference. Like, if you're being authentic and your true essence, I mean, just by smiling at someone, it can change their whole world. Like, we have no idea how powerful one person can be, but imagine if we all united. Like, imagine if all the Earth Angels woke up and we together, could make it could be exponential. I mean, it's just, this is what you're here to do, is to remind us of who we are.
Yeah, I love playing with the idea of, just one tiny thing can change so much. It can save somebody's life. It can, even just make somebody's day and I think there has been a big movement recently with the random acts of kindness. Yeah. There's been so much where people are just doing random things just to cheer people up or to make people happy And I do kind of explore that a little bit in the later books in the Earth Angel series, where a couple of the characters decide to go out and do random acts of kindness.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And it's just, you just never know what people are actually going through. When you walk down the street and you walk past somebody and you smile at them, you might be the only person they've smiled at them like all day or all week. Mm-hmm. Even when you just take the time to speak to somebody, I remember working, I've had lots of different jobs, but I remember working on a switchboard once, and some of the people calling up, I would be trying to direct them to the right department, and they would just want to chat. And I'm just like, all the lights would be lit up of all the calls that I'm supposed to be taking, and they're just chattering away, and I'm thinking, but what if I'm the only person they've actually had a conversation with this week? You just don't know. What kind of contact people have had with other people. And I think it's just so, so important. And, I think a lot of Earth Angels can feel a little bit overwhelmed as well at the idea that they've come here to make a difference. They've come here to change the world, to fix the world, whatever they, the way they want to see it. And that's a really overwhelming thing for one person. So to think that every tiny little thing that you do is creating ripples that does actually change the world, it's a lot easier to be able to do things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just a lovely way of looking at it. And I think, more people just need to realize it. Like, a lot of people think, they give up because they think, well, I can't change anything anyway. And in some ways, we're not here to change other people or other things. We're just here to be ourselves. We're here to create the essence of who we are and let that shine. It's not about, changing other people. It's just be who you are and that will change other people.
Yeah, exactly. It's being the most amazing you that you can possibly be and following, your own purpose and mission and just shining, I suppose, sort of shining your own light so that, other people are inspired by it and, you will then find that you tend to attract people. I'm saying about the law of attraction, the more that you're yourself and you're being authentic, you tend to then attract people who are on the same wavelength as you. You're on the same vibration and it then just creates an even bigger ripple.
Yeah. Like-hearted.
Uh,
So that's our Earth Angels. Let's talk about Children of the Golden Age. When I don't, it gave me goosebumps. It you know, I teared up. I mean, I've known about the indigos for a long time. I've known about the crystals. You know, the concept of the rainbow children has been out for a while. I mean, but when reading it and, you know, understanding what that was saying, I don't know. It was magical.
Yeah, the new generations of children, the Golden Age children, is, yeah, it's something. When I started writing the books, I was trying to make some sense of, out of some of the experiences that I'd had with these children, right, in real life. And, you know, they're very much, oh, they're so in tune, they're telepathic, they're, you know, they are just a whole new level, really. And it's really interesting to see it in such young kids. I mean, I've had conversations with kids who just like, and I've even just said to them a couple of times, like, you just know, don't you? You just get it. And nobody else seems to give you credit for that. And they're just like, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've had instances with kids just like, I'm standing at a bus stop and I think something, and this little girl turns around and looks at me, and it's just like, she says with it, like with her eyes, she's just like, yeah, I know. And I'm just like, oh, did I say that out loud? Did I? And it's not, it's just that they're telepathic. And, right, and so, yeah, some of the experiences that Violet has in the Awakening, in the second book in the series, were based on what was happening to me at the time.
Nice.
Or just before, because I was trying to make sense of it. And it made total sense that I was having these experiences because I'd said to the children, you know, previously, if I'm not awake, wake me up, do something to remind me. And these experiences were all part of that. So, yeah, the Golden Age children, there's the indigos, the crystals and the rainbows. And they've come from completely different galaxies to us. They've, you know, they've come from places of pure light and love and wisdom. And they all, you know, they each have different roles. So the indigos are the way changers. They're the ones shaking things up. They're the ones refusing to let the systems and things remain as they are. And their energy is a very, very high vibrational energy. So, you know, they can think and do things at a speed that most of us, you know, just feel dizzy. The crystals... Yeah, some of the stuff about the crystals that came through as I was writing, it was quite interesting because the crystals are literally crystals. You know, the energy is that of the crystals from the earth. So they have a much slower energy, but it's so knowledgeable and so wise, and they just take everything in and they kind of consider everything, and they're quite telepathic. So a lot of the time when they're younger, they don't feel the need to speak, you know, so they're sort of seen as being a bit slow or not quite there. And that's not the case at all. They are so switched on, but they don't feel the need to be at a fast pace. And then the rainbows are just, they are just pure light. You know, they are just pure beings of light, and they don't have any baggage or karma or anything. They are purely here to raise the vibration of the earth as a whole and to bring their wisdom with them.
Yeah, I honestly believe that a lot of the, because autism is becoming so big right now, like bigger than ever before, I think a lot of the autistic kids are part of the Children of the Golden Age that just, they're just, because they have no filters, they just kind of have to shut down a bit so that they can actually be here on Earth. So,
definitely. I mean, and with the indigos, you're probably looking at ADHD and ADD.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, it seems like they can't hold their attention to anything for very long, but actually it's just because their mind is working so much faster than ours. And they usually have something that they're exceptionally amazing at. And same with autism and Asperger's, and, you know, they have their specialties. They have the thing that they can do like nobody else. And I suppose the human way that we've been used to is that people have to be all round good at everything. You know, in school and in work and in our lives, you know, we have to be able to do everything. We all have to be completely independent and to be able to do it all. And I think what the Golden Age children are actually showing us and reminding us is that actually we're meant to be all in it together as a collective, as a whole, as communities. And so playing to our strengths and doing the things that we're actually the best at makes much more sense than trying to do everything. And, you know, not doing everything very well, but just kind of getting by and existing. So, yeah, they really have come to completely change the way we do things. And, you know, the things are changing very slowly. But I keep seeing more and more amazing stories where people are realizing that they can't keep putting them on drugs. They can't keep trying to dampen them and slow them down. But if they find the thing that they're really good at, then they don't need medication.
Right. Okay, let's talk about the biggest theme of all of your books. Well, at least all of this series. Yeah. It touches in a little bit of the other, but the twin flame. So honestly, I have met a soulmate or someone from my soul group in this life, and I know how difficult that was when he wasn't ready and was kept making the same decisions that he'd made in previous lives. And it was like, you know, it was frustrating and it was, you know, difficult. But at the same time, I had people say, well, you know, he's not the one. And I'm like, you know what? I don't believe in the one. I don't connect at all with that. I don't believe that we were one soul and then we were divided and then we, you know, we've looked for that, you know, other half forever, because that kind of is the definition of what a twin flame is. But when you talk about twin flame, you bring in a completely, I mean, because, you know, the indigos wouldn't have a twin flame with an indigo. They would have it with a different, because indigos are all sort of one and really recognize that, you know? So it's like you bring in a completely different aspect of twin flame than I've heard. And everything that I've read that you've talked about, I mean, it resonates so deeply with me. So now I have definitely started to second guess that whole concept.
Yeah, the twin flame concept is an interesting one. I mean, when I first wrote the Earth Angel Training Academy, and I published it 5 years ago, but I wrote it in 2009, so 7 years ago, and I knew very little about the actual concept of twin flames other than my own experience and literally a couple of lines that I read in a book. So everything that came through in the books was channeled. It just came through like that. So, and I have read, you know, quite a bit of, you know, blogs and books and things since, but I still resonate more with what came through for me and what I've experienced than I have with a lot of things that I've read. And I suppose the one thing that I object to the most that I've read is when people say, this is what a twin flame is. This is the only thing a twin flame is. Anything else is not a twin flame. And it's got to be exactly like this. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute. Everybody is going to have a different experience. Everybody is, you know, every twin flame relationship is going to be different, you know, because people are different. Like, you know, you can't put it into a sort of into a cookie cutter kind of mold and say, if it's anything other than this, it's not a twin flame relationship, because how can anybody know that? Exactly. You know, it's all just, it's a concept, it's a theory anyway. And so, yeah, the first thing when people write to me and ask me to do them, you know, I do oracle readings and things, and they're like, is he my twin flame? And it's kind of like when people ask me what kind of earth angel they are, and they're like, am I a mermaid? And I'm like, well, do you feel like a mermaid? Yeah. I'm like, well, okay then. You don't need me to tell you this. And I think it's definitely got to be an inner journey and an inner quest. And I suppose my books are just a way of helping to remind people of what it's all about, but it's not like the definitive answer to it. So yeah, with the way that I see twin flames is that I don't even believe that you only have one twin flame.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
But I do believe that out of, I don't know, say you had seven twin flames, I'm just throwing a number out there, but say you had seven, the chances are there might only be one out of that seven or two out of that seven that would be the right age, the right gender, in the right space, in the right geographical location. So the chances are you might only meet one, maybe two or three of them, but there isn't just one of them. Okay. So when people do meet more than one, they get really confused. They're like, well, hang on a minute, I thought that was my twin flame, but this is my twin flame. and also getting hung up on the label of it as well is not always always a great thing, because sometimes that can actually hinder the relationship, especially with twin flame relationships. I know there's well-known stages, and I mean, I've posted them on my blog, and I've kind of discuss them a little bit through the books, the idea that the relationship goes through different stages. And so, you know, you go through meeting and awakening, and then you go through like testing and crisis. And then quite often a lot of twin flames end up in at the runner stage. So, you know, one pushes the other away or one runs. And again, not every relationship is going to go through the same stages. It's not always going to look the same, but as a generalization, that's, I suppose that's fairly close. And I think it's really looking at the underlying causes and reasons for these things. So, you know, why does one feel the need to run? Mm-hmm. Is it because they're not ready? Is it because they're not in the right space energetically? Is it because they're just overwhelmed by the whole concept? Sometimes it is down to their past life reunions. So sometimes there'll be something that happened in their past reunion that never got resolved, and that will then show up in this life. There's so many different reasons, and sometimes it's purely that they both have very strong missions. They have both very strong reasons for being here, and at that moment in time, those two missions aren't aligned with each other. You know, one needs to go in one direction, and the other needs to go in the other direction in order to fulfill those missions. And with twin flame relationships, it's very, very difficult to have compromise. So, within most relationships, there'll be some compromise. One will compromise what they want to do for the other, or to stay in that space. But with twin flames, it's very difficult to have that compromise if you've both got very strong missions, because you believe in each other so much that you wouldn't want to be the reason why they're not following their mission. So you will actually be actively encouraging them to go and fulfill their mission. And I know that's where I've been at with my flame, is that he has a strong mission. I have a strong mission. We both believe in each other so much that we could never be the reason why we each didn't fulfill our missions here.
Right.
And if that means being apart, then that means being apart. But we've gotten to a space now where we can do that.
Right.
And it's not the end of the world, which I have to admit, the first few times, you know, it did feel like the end of the world. And that goes back to the idea that most earth angels on earth feel like they want to go home. And one of the overriding feelings that you have when you're with your twin flame is that you feel like you've come home. So it's almost like having a home here on this planet that you don't belong on. If you lose that, you know, if you separate from your twin flame and you lose your home, as it were, then it can be devastating, because that was what was anchoring you here.
Right.
But one of the things that I've learned and that I've seen in other people is that no matter what you do, whether you're with your twin flame or not, you're always connected, always. You know, sometimes in very bizarre ways, you'll end up, you know, having the same experiences at the same time and all sorts of crazy things, but you are just always connected, and you always have that unconditional love for each other. It's never going to go away. But when you are in a place where you're not actually with them, it's so important to really focus on yourself, on why you're here, on your mission, and really go for it. Because the reunion of the flames is a big part of the spiritual awakening right now, but it's not the only part. You know, and some people spend so much of their time wanting to be with their flame, looking for their flame, and then missing their flame if they split up when they finally found them. And it can kind of take over everything else. And it's not the only reason that we're here. It's part of it, definitely, but it's not the only reason that we're here.
Right. And part of it is that feeling of, you know, feeling of home, but also that it is a very pure experience of love.
It is unconditional. It's kind of hard to describe, because I mean, I don't have children,
right?
But I imagine, you know, obviously you love your children unconditionally. Generally, whatever they do, you love them anyway. And that happens in a twin flame relationship. It doesn't matter what either of you does or says, you love them anyway. And in some ways that does cause problems, because obviously you'll kind of forgive anything.
Right.
And sometimes you do have to come down to, you know, a more 3D level and set the boundaries and say, well, actually, I deserve to be treated better than that. Or I deserve, you know, because things will come up and you'll trigger each other. You know, I mean, that's the thing with twin flames, is that you're here to really help each other to remember and to awaken and to live your purpose. And to be able to do that, you need to clear out all of the old baggage that you're carrying around from your previous existences. So, you know, a twin flame can trigger those things, but then help you to heal them as well, because they'll make you aware of it.
Right. But if the two of you, when you do come together, the love that it shares with the world is kind of part of that message. Like, that's why, I guess, why the twin flames are being reunited. Like, it's that there's so much love that it actually begins to affect everyone around them.
Definitely. And it's also kind of changing the way that we see relationships as well.
Yes.
Because the twin flame relationships don't necessarily fit into a typical relationship structure. You know, you're not necessarily going to meet them and get married and have kids and have a house. And you know what I mean? It doesn't always follow that structure. It doesn't always, and like I said, there can't be that compromise either. So it is kind of challenging the structure of relationships as it stands now, which I think is a good thing.
Oh, so good. So good.
Because, you know, relationships, it's got stuck into such a certain way of being, and there's so much more to it than that. You know, you can be in a relationship with somebody but not being in the same physical space as them all the time, 24/7.
Right.
You can be in a relationship with somebody and not compromise on your, you know, on what you're here to do, on your mission. You can be in a relationship with somebody and not have to have kids and get married and have a house together. You know, there's just so many different ways that you can do things. And I think especially with women now stepping into their power and stepping into why they're here, we need now more than ever to be able to be in relationships where both parties can go and fulfill their missions and not feel like they have to stay at home and, you know, be the homemaker or be the wife or, you know, whatever that entails. And it's not to say that you can't have a twin flame relationship like that, because there are people who do it. But I think, yeah, it's showing people that it's possible to be in that space of love and not have to give up everything else.
Well, I think the old dichotomy, see, this is, I mean, it's so important for you to write about your experiences with a twin flame, because the old dichotomy, I mean, well, the whole world's whole dichotomy and everything has been that we do it out of fear. You know, mm-hmm. Women, they don't, I can't tell you how many people say, well, yeah, I'm ready to leave. Well, have you communicated the problems? No, I can't do that. They won't like me. I'm like, oh my God. It's like we do everything out of fear instead of, you know, from the purest of our heart. Like our whole definition of what love is skewed based on most people thinking that what they think love is actually really just fear. You know, they stay because they're afraid of being alone. They stay, you know, in an abusive situation because that's how their parents were. And, you know, as a child, you know, you had to believe that that your parents loved you unconditionally. So if your parents abused you, well, that must mean it's love, right? So we have these really, you know, misunderstood definitions of what love is. And we, you know, so bringing this energy in and discussing whether it's a twin flame or a soulmate or whatever it is, however we want to define it, what we do have to define is that we have to change relationships. We have to get out of that codependent, you know, fear-based belief of what we think relationships are.
Definitely. And I think the biggest thing is that we've got to start with our relationship with ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's one of my biggest lessons in the last 6 months, I would say, which doesn't sound like very long ago, but I was going through some health things and I was creating the online classes, the Earth Angel classes at the time. I was doing them in person at the time. And I sort of really came to the full realization that, do you know what? I've got this one body for this particular life. And if I don't love it unconditionally, who the hell else is going to? You know, it's the only thing that's going to be with me for life. Right. And as much as the cells are going to be changing and renewing and all the rest of it, it is, you know, this is me, and this is me for this lifetime. And no matter what it looks like, no matter what it feels like, you know, I've just got to love it unconditionally and be in that space of, you know, gratitude for myself and for my body and for me. And so many people are so afraid of doing that because they don't want to seem like they're selfish or they're right. a narcissist, which is one of my like most hated words at the moment. Because, you know, none of those labels matter. What matters is that you can truly appreciate who you are, what you look like, how you feel, all of it. And I think it's only when we really start understanding that and believing that and seeing that, that it then just, that is going to make a huge impact, not just, you know, our relationships with other people. And I mean, that is part of it, because I mean, I know so many people who don't see their own beauty. They do not see how amazing they are. And I do try and remind them and tell them as much as possible, but they really need to feel it from inside, because I was the same, you know, people would tell me how amazing I was and I was like, yeah, whatever. yeah. But it's not until you really get it yourself and you really feel it. And I made a pact with myself from that point onwards that I would never speak ill of my body again, that I would never downplay how I looked or who I was or what I'd done to anybody else or to myself. And I wouldn't brush off, you know, compliments or, you know, other people saying good things about me, because I could accept it. And, you know, that took a lot of doing. Because, you know, especially as a child, and especially being, you know, back on this earth again, I mean, I'm an old soul as well, so obviously had lots of lives. And I remember as a child looking into the mirror and being like, who the hell is that? Because I didn't recognize myself. It wasn't, you know, I'm just like, what did they put me in this body for, you know? And I was really, really harsh on myself. I really just couldn't get it. I just didn't like what I saw, and I couldn't even tell you why.
Right.
I just know that it wasn't what I was used to. It wasn't what I'd expected or hoped for. I don't know, but I do know that the body that I'm in is perfect for the mission that I'm doing. It's perfect for, you know, even all the health issues or everything that I've been through is perfect, because it's helped me to get to the point where I am. I can empathize with people in different situations. I can, you know, really feel where people are coming from. And it's, you know, it's allowed me to do everything that I've done and be where I am. And yeah, if everybody can get to that point where no matter what weight they are, no matter what they look like, no matter what space they're in, they can just love themselves first and foremost, so that just has a ripple effect outwards from there.
Yeah, and that's being our authentic self. But it is a bit of a challenge sometimes for a lot of people, and a lot of people don't really know how to do that. So if you could, you know, include that in part of your writing, that might benefit a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, it's really something that I've come to realize about myself. Yeah. Because, you know, I suppose it's just, I don't know if it's programming and conditioning, it's media, you know, it's people around us. It's, you know, even being bullied or teased as a child or whatever it is, or like you said, not getting that unconditional love, you know, from your family. I mean, I was, you know, fortunate to have that complete unconditional love from my mother. And it was quite funny, actually, at times. And this is something else that I came across during my sort of the beginning of my spiritual path, I suppose. I came across Richard Bach's Messiah's Handbook from Illusions. And it's a little handbook full of quotes. And there was one in there that just struck me, and it resonated so deeply with me. And when I told it to other people, they were like, what? What are you on about? And the quote was that unconditional love could sometimes be seen as indifference. Huh. And it resonated with me, because I remember growing up thinking that, you know, my mom just doesn't care what grades I get. Oh, she doesn't care that I did really well on that. She doesn't. And I realized, it wasn't until so much later that I realized that it wasn't she didn't care. It was that no matter what, she loved me exactly the same.
Right.
It was unconditional. Didn't matter what I did. I could get a C, a D, an F, an A. Didn't make any difference in my grades. And it's because she loved me no matter what. And, you know, I just didn't get that growing up. And I realize now just that, yeah, no matter what I did, she was just always there and always, you know, still is to this day. It's just like, no matter what, she is there. And that it's a constant. And that's made such a huge difference. And, you know, a lot of people, and that's what I was saying about with the twin flame relationships, you know, you do need to set some boundaries, you know, can't just do whatever you want and the other person will love you anyway, because they will. But obviously, you know, there's got to be the respect there as well. And, you know, the love for the other person on, you know, on the level of, well, you know, if you love that person, you wouldn't do that. But yeah, it's having that complete unconditional love for yourself and then being able to extend that to other people. And I think as well, we need to, I've been having this conversation just recently about relationships, and we need to move into a space where we can feel that unconditional love for people that we don't necessarily need to have a relationship with. Right. You know, because we can extend that love and that feeling of we're all in this together, we're all one, without needing to have like anything more than that connection, that friendship. And I think on a more sort of human level, we think, oh, well, I've got a connection with that person, so I need to have a relationship with them.
Yes.
And I mean, I've made, I wouldn't say mistake, I wouldn't consider any of it mistake, but I've had that feeling for a connection with somebody and I'm like, wow, this is the one, this is the person I'm supposed to be with. And it wasn't, it was just that we had a connection because we knew each other from previous life. And, you know, we had that connection and yes, we were meant to be in each other's lives and to teach each other what we needed to at the time, but it wasn't meant to be forever. Right. But I think people are feeling that more now than ever, especially earth angels who are finding each other and remembering each other from their previous existences or maybe from being at the academy. And they're having that really sort of deep connection with each other. I mean, I know, you know, my friend who I run the classes with, Andrew, I mean, we've known each other before. You know, we recognize each other. And we're just really good friends because of that.
Right.
So it's widening that circle and not, you know, and being able to be friends with men and women and have that connection and be in that space, but in a different way, on a different level.
Totally. I love it. Michelle, you are a blessing. I hope that everybody reads your books. We do want to talk about you coming. You're coming to Toronto to the Indigo Spirit First Canadian Place on Friday, May 20th.
Yes.
Yep. You are also doing an Awakening 101 and a Remembering 101 workshops, plus book signing at New World Gifts in Buffalo on Thursday, May 26th.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there anything else that you, I mean, I would love to have you come back. I seriously, we could chat for hours about
yeah, we probably could.
All of this stuff. People can reach you at your website, michellegordon.com. Oh no, it's .co.uk. Is that right?
Yeah, .co.uk, yeah, because it's the British version of .com.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have all of that on my website and I'll probably get that up as quickly as I can. And it's been, I'm honored to meet you. I'm honored to help in any way I can. And I absolutely adore you. So thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much. Yeah, there will be a tool website up and running soon as well, which people will be able to get through my website. And that will have all the details of all the cities and the venues and the events.
Great.
That's coming this week, hopefully.
Okay, perfect. So I'll put that link as well. If you send that to me, I'll put that on my on mine. All right. Well, again, love you and love your books, and I can't wait for more. So thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much. It's been good fun.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instant feedback at bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.